okay, here's what we're going to do. Start with Paul, apparently in his youth, which was where? Which was where? Where do we think Paul grew up? He's called Paul of... You see Tarsus there? Tarsus is down here in this province, this coastal province. And I'm just going to, of course, to use the word Turkey as a misnomer, because there was no Turkey then. But let's use that word to make it easy. Cilicia was this province, on this coastal province in Turkey, and Saul was from Tarsus. But then where did he go? Where do we know that he went? Somewhere in his youth. We're going to get there. Where did he go? Somewhere in his youth. Texas? Okay. We've had three guesses so far. If he studied with Gamaliel, then he somehow must have ended up in Jerusalem, right? If he was in Jerusalem shortly after Jesus' death and resurrection. So Saul, from Tarsus, a Jew, but then ends up down here in Jerusalem. So he was a young man in Jerusalem, advancing in the faith. He was a promising young star in Judaism. And then after the death and resurrection of Jesus, he is persecuting the Christians. Then where should our next arrow go for Paul? Which direction from Jerusalem? Right. Then Paul heads to Damascus with letters from the chief priests so that he can go try to arrest Christians there. And somewhere on that route near Damascus, Jesus came to him. And he had his revelation of the risen Christ. And so then he spends some time in Damascus recovering from what just happened, you know, those 3 days, and then spending time with the disciples there. Okay, so that gives us what we know from the very early parts of Paul's story. And then where did he go next? Well, what he says in Galatians is that he went to Arabia. Now, during that time, Arabia referred geographically to everything from the Sinai Peninsula all the way up into here. But probably in Galatians, the word refers to this right here, this political empire of the Nabataeans. Okay, so this is something about the Paul story that most of us didn't know. After Damascus, Paul went to probably modern-day Jordan. Now, why? Not certain why, but basically there are two possibilities. Either, in the pattern of people like Moses, God needed to get him alone in the wilderness for a time of preparation. Or he was preaching. Because we know that during these years, he started preaching about Jesus. So, either way, Paul went probably this direction, either to be alone for some time, some years, or to start preaching. Then, the next thing we know is that he's back to Damascus. So, out to Arabia for a time, back to Damascus, and when he's back to Damascus, we know that he's preaching there. So, he starts preaching in Damascus, and what happened? Somebody remember? Right. He had to leave. He had to flee from Damascus. Where did he go? He went from Damascus back to Jerusalem. He saw just Peter and James, but no other apostles. He preached in Jerusalem. And what happened there? Well, his life was in danger again, and he had to flee again. Okay, so he fled Damascus, goes to Jerusalem, flees Jerusalem, and then what happens next is he goes to Syria, this whole region, and Cilicia, that coastal province that he was from, and we know that now he was preaching. Okay, so can you see why when we say first missionary journey, it's a misnomer? Because all this is before the first missionary journey. Maybe preaching in Arabia, definitely preaching in Damascus, definitely preaching in Jerusalem, and then traveling in Syria and traveling in Cilicia preaching. And probably that included preaching in Tarsus, because what happens next is a church gets planted in Antioch. And what did Barnabas do? After he went to Antioch to help the new church, what did he do? He went to Tarsus to look for Paul. So Barnabas comes from Jerusalem up here to Antioch, where there's this first Gentile church that has been planted. And then Barnabas goes over to Tarsus until he finds Paul and brings Paul back to Antioch. And for a whole year, Barnabas and Paul help that new church in Antioch. I think this is all really interesting because I think for most of us, the Paul story starts in Acts 13 with the first missionary journey. We have his conversion, and then we have the first missionary journey. And yet there is something like 10 or 15 years in between there. It's a little uncertain exactly what the timing is. We'll talk about that later, in which God was doing a lot of other things in him and through him. Okay, so then he's in Antioch with Barnabas for a year, and then from there back to Jerusalem, apparently again, maybe with famine relief. But that's the visit when he talks about, that's probably the visit when he talks about the Jerusalem apostles giving him the right hand of fellowship. In other words, the confirmation of his gospel, that they were teaching the same gospel. Okay? That's that visit to Jerusalem. And then he goes back up there to that church in Antioch after that trip. And what happens? Who takes the next step? The Holy Spirit takes the next step. The Holy Spirit says, set apart for me Barnabas and Paul for the work to which I've called them. So he and Barnabas and other prophets and teachers were at the church in Antioch, and the Spirit said, set them apart for the work. So that starts now. So that's all before the first missionary journey. That's all background with Paul. And so then, Paul's in Antioch, and we start the first missionary journey. I'm going to switch maps, and go over here. Whoops, that's not it. Sorry, just one second. There we go. Okay. So here's how the first missionary journey begins. So you see where we're at now in relation to that other map. The nice thing about these is they're not nearly so busy as that other one. So there's Antioch up there. Jerusalem, of course, is down here. And so they go over to Seleucia, to the port city, and then they sail from there to Cyprus. Why was Cyprus important at that point? It's where Barnabas was from, right. So it seems like they're going back to where Barnabas was from. So, interesting observation, if we can jump to one right away. Saul went to Cilicia, his home region, his hometown. Barnabas went to Cyprus, his hometown, right at the beginning of their two different parts of their traveling ministry. So they sail to Cyprus. They take that road from Salamis over to Paphos. And then from there, they sail up to Perga. Now, what is going on with this green line on this map? There's Perga up there. What's this green line for? Traffic is clear across the Eastern Mediterranean. It's because it's a Sunday morning, and so there aren't as many people trying to get to work, and they're just not going to church. The roads should be full on Sunday morning, right? No. Who went from Perga back to Jerusalem? John Mark did. Okay, so the orange line is representing Paul and Barnabas headed up toward Perga, and then the green line is reminding you that John Mark then leaves and heads back home to Jerusalem. Okay, from Perga, they travel up to, and I'm sorry it changes zoom levels so quickly here. I know that's a little disorienting. From Perga, they travel up to the other Antioch, right? So the Antioch that was the hometown, the home church was over here. This is, and then this Antioch, which is Antioch in Phrygia. Sometimes it's called Antioch of Pisidia, but Antioch in Phrygia. So this is Antioch in Syria, Syrian Antioch, and that's Phrygian Antioch up there. So they travel through the hills. This is nice because it shows you the mountains. Okay, they travel up through the mountains and then up to this plain up here and to Antioch, and then from there down to Iconium, from there down to down through Lystra and down to Derbe. And then what did he do? Mentioned this last Sunday. Once Paul got to Derbe, let's go back, let's zoom out on our map, because we've talked about this previously a couple times. Okay, this gives you your sense of where we're at. Okay, so from Derbe to get home to Antioch, you go through the Cilicium Pass, and you go down here to Antioch, right? So which route did Paul take to get home to Antioch? He went back. Exactly right. From Derbe, Paul doesn't go that way. He goes this way, back to Lystra, back to Iconium, back to Antioch, back down to the coast. Now, he doesn't go back to Cyprus, but he goes there and goes home. So that shows him reversing his direction, and then from Antioch in Syria back home. So there's his route home. Okay, he gets back to Antioch, and he spends no little time with the disciples there. Okay, so that's the first missionary journey. And if we just switch back to this map, so let's just see the whole thing at once. Okay, so that's from Antioch down to Salamis, across Cyprus, up here, up there, 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 and then back and home. Beautiful, huh? All right? You got that? Now, at this point, he maybe takes another trip to Jerusalem. Acts 15 is right here. Okay? So he probably goes from Antioch back to Jerusalem between the first and second missionary journeys, because there's all this conflict over Gentile salvation and what the requirements are for Gentiles. So we've got a trip down to Jerusalem and back home, and then they leave on the second missionary journey. Now I'm going to stick with this map for a minute because Logos does something funny at this point. So second missionary journey, what Acts, the end of Acts 15 says, and this is what intrigues me. The end of Acts 15 tells us something really important, and those Logos maps that follow the second missionary journey skip it. What Acts 15 tells us is that Paul, okay, he and Barnabas split, right? Barnabas goes back to Cyprus. Where did Paul go at the beginning of the second missionary journey? What it tells us is he went to Syria and Cilicia. So why is that important? Have we seen those places before? You see what I'm saying? We just saw him go back on that Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe track. Now, second missionary journey, where is he going? He's going back. And what the end of Acts 15 says is, he went to Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the disciples. So where did he go at the beginning of the second missionary journey? He went back to the churches that we don't know about, we don't know the names of, that he planted before the first missionary journey even began. And he strengthened those disciples. That's a cool part of the Paul story that gets forgotten frequently. So from Antioch, he goes somewhere out in Syria, somewhere through Cilicia, different places, strengthening the disciples. And then from there, where does he go? Well, right back where he had been already, to Derbe, and then back to Lystra and Iconium, and then we can switch to our other map. So this is his third time in places like Lystra and Iconium, right? So we're on the second missionary journey now. We'll switch out of this. We'll switch back to this, and let's find the second missionary journey here. That didn't help. Hey, it was right there. Where'd it go? there it is. Okay, and the map I want is... Awkward silence. Here we go. This is the map we want. Okay, so from... So he comes across here, through Syria, through Cilicia, across here, visits at least Lystra and Iconium. We're not told if he went up here to Antioch. But then he heads this way. Now, we don't know where he was trying to get. What we know is that God kept stopping him. You remember that part of the story? He kept getting hindered. So he tried to go south, and God wouldn't let him. And the best guess is that he was trying to get here. When you see him head this way, the guess is that he was going, taking this route into Ephesus, and God said, nope, don't go that way. Then he wanted to try to go north, because I can't point that high because I'm too short. But there were, you know, modern day, oh, I can't write on the map. But up there at the top is where modern day Istanbul is. I just zoomed out of it. Modern day Istanbul is right here. That's where the Bosporus is. And there were lots of cities up there that he could have gone and visited. So it may well be that he was trying to go that direction and God said, no. So essentially you picture this kind of sandwich and God squeezed him the direction God wanted him to go, which was that way through Mysia and over to Troas. And what was the really important thing that happened in Troas? That set the direction for his travels. That's right. In Troas, he had the Macedonian vision. And so they... Let me show it to you on the map so you can see where he's going to go. He has this vision of this man from Macedonia saying, come over and help us. So you see where Macedonia is? So Paul had been trying to go this way down to Ephesus, and God said no. And he tried to go this way, and God said no, because what God really wanted him, where God really wanted him, was over here. So God pushed him to Troas, then God granted him the vision in Troas to go to Macedonia. So then he travels to Philippi. You see his couple stops there on the way to Philippi, and you know the things that God did there. And then from Philippi, he travels to Berea. Okay, this is awkward placement. There we go. That's better, huh? So I said Berea, but he travels to Thessalonica first. And then the believers, you remember the believers in Thessalonica get him out of town when he doesn't want to leave? He loved those Thessalonian believers, wanted to be with those Thessalonian believers. So he goes kind of out of the way to Berea, and he apparently waits in Berea hoping to get back to Thessalonica, and it just didn't happen. And so eventually they take him from Berea, and it's hard to tell from the text whether they took him by boat or whether they took him by land. And where, what's at the bottom of this map? Where did he go? That's right. He went down to Athens. So there you can see where Athens is. So which journey are we on? Second, right? And from Athens, he went to let's see what they have here. No, that's not it. From Athens, he went to Corinth, right? That's right where we're at in our study right now. I don't know why. There is not... Sorry. They have a map of Athens to Thessalonica because he maybe sent Timothy up there. So we want this map. Paul meets Aquila and Priscilla in Corinth. Okay, so he... More gurgle. Well, you see Rome, so you can see Aquila and Priscilla's trip after they were kicked out of Rome. And then if we zoom in, you can see, well, thank you for not showing us Corinth. Hello, Corinth. Okay, don't show us Corinth. We'll see it on this map then. Cenchrea is the little port town right by Corinth. Cenchrea is where you catch the boat Okay, there we can see them both. Okay, so he travels. Now, this is funny. This shows the land route. The other one showed the sea route. He travels to Athens and then over to Corinth, which is where we're at in our story right now. And then from Corinth, he caught a boat to get ready to sail home, but he stopped. Again, this is right where we're at in the story. Very important stop in Ephesus. How long did he stay in Ephesus? Well, this time, not very long. He could only stay just a little while in Ephesus, but who did he leave there? He left Priscilla and Aquila, and then he sailed home from Ephesus back to Antioch. And that, he sailed home from Ephesus to Caesarea, and then it seems like he went from Caesarea to Jerusalem, and then from Jerusalem back up to Antioch. That's probably on this map. Yep, there you go. Okay, that ends the second missionary journey, and then that gets us to the third journey, which is what we're just starting at the end of Acts 18. So, where does the third journey go? How's our time? 10 o'clock? Keep moving, Tim. The third journey doesn't take quite as long to talk about. Yep, no, nope. Right when you're ready to click on it, it disappears. Paul's third missionary journey. Okay, Paul starts his third missionary journey. Now, what the text says is that he went through the regions of Phrygia and Galatia. So as we talked about last Sunday, third journey, he wants to get to Ephesus. The relatively quickest and easiest way to get to Ephesus in the ancient world is to go down to Seleucia and take the boat around Ephesus over here. But instead, as we said last Sunday, he takes this land route through Cilicia, up through the mountain pass, and then up into this plain, and back for the fourth time. So maybe, don't know, but it's possible that along the way here, he's for the third time visiting churches he planted in Cilicia. And then up for the fourth time to strengthen the believers here. That's what Acts 18 tells us. So he's traveling through there, and meanwhile, Acts 18 tells us about what's going on in Ephesus, and we're going to return to that this morning. So Paul was headed to Ephesus, but the end of Acts 18, Paul's still out here somewhere, and we're told about Aquila and Priscilla and Apollos and what was going on in Ephesus before Paul got there. But then he was able to take that land route and get to Ephesus. I am going to skip down here to a different map because what they do here is confusing.
Quick question.
Yes.
So he went through Colossae potentially, even though he'd not been visited the church there? The last map showed it to land route going.
Oh, they're both right there beside each other. Right, that's the only time we know of for that visit would be when he went through there on that route. Right? I totally missed that.
We don't know if Paul going to Colossae.
To Colossae. Right, it never says he does, but or what was going on that boat? Yeah, I don't know. But that route, apparently, I mean, we're guessing about the route, but we also know where the Roman roads were. So it's not that, it's not like a just a random draw line on a map kind of a guess with that route. So I don't know, Eric. That's a good question. So he ends up in Ephesus. And then what Acts tells us, is that he went to Macedonia. Now, it doesn't tell us where he went in Macedonia, but it's very likely that he went back to Philippi, back to Thessalonica, back to Berea. So he goes back to Macedonia. So that's this route here. And then it tells us that he went to Greece. And again, it doesn't tell us where he went in Greece, but it's very likely that he went to places like Athens and Corinth, where he had been before. Now, one other thing that we'll insert here. So he travels back to places he'd been, Troas, Thessalonica, Berea, Athens, Corinth, Philippi, etc. It's also possible that in here, in Romans, Paul says he took a trip to Illyricum, the farthest west he ever got before Rome. Illyricum is up here. It's possible that it's in this time frame that he travels across to Illyricum and back. He maybe ends up back in Corinth, and he then wants to sail back home. He is ready at this point to get to Jerusalem. So from Corinth, he's going to sail home. The problem is, what Acts is going to tell us is that there were threats from the Jews that didn't allow him to do that. And I don't know what that means, because to me it seems like you're safer on a boat than you would be on land, going back to places where they'd try to kill you before. But apparently there was some kind of plot going on that made it clear to Paul he couldn't get on that boat. So what he did is he took the land route back up through Macedonia. So you see the green line here? He went back. So that means he could have visited places like Berea, Thessalonica, Philippi again. When I put together all the different opportunities he had to revisit those churches, it's startling how many times he may have been able to revisit the same places. So he sailed back up there, and then from, not sailed, he went by land back up here, and then from here he did, we know he was in Philippi. It tells us he was in Philippi. And then from there, he starts the trip home. He's taking boat down here, and he comes to Miletus. And I probably got a map of this. Let me just jump to the map so I don't confuse you. Yeah, there you go. So he gets to Troas, and then from Assos, he takes the boat and takes the boat down, stops at Mytilene, comes down here. And this is where at Miletus, he calls for the Ephesian elders to come, and you have Acts chapter 20, and his really, he just pours his heart out to the leaders of that church in Ephesus. That's just a quick stop when he's already on the ship, headed back home. So he stops there, talks to the Ephesian elders, and then from there, he sails to Tyre, and this time, doesn't apparently go back home to Antioch. Remember we said his last time in Antioch was probably at the end of that second missionary journey when he left on the third. And then he goes from Tyre to Jerusalem. And then you have his imprisonments and his trial and the trip to Rome and all of those things. Okay? So if we hop back to this map, let's see if we can get all three journeys. This will get really messy on the map, I know. But let's just give ourselves just a quick overview of all three journeys. But let's start with Paul in Tarsus, right, as a youth, then to Jerusalem for his training, then to Damascus where he meets the risen Jesus on the way, then to Arabia, either to be alone with the Lord or preaching, then to Damascus preaching, kicked out, then to Jerusalem preaching, kicked out, then to Syria preaching, then to Cilicia preaching, then Barnabas gets him and brings him to Antioch, where he spends at least a year. There's actually another trip to Jerusalem in there, and then the Spirit says, send him. Okay, that's before the first journey, and then the first journey was the one that was like this, right? First journey. Got that? Okay. Second journey from Antioch through to strengthen the disciples, Syria, Cilicia, back up here, strengthening these disciples. Then I want to, maybe wants to get to Ephesus. Spirit says no. Wants to go north. Spirit says no. Ends up in Troas. Macedonian vision gets him over here to Philippi. from there. Thessalonica doesn't want to go to Berea, but God gets him there. Maybe doesn't want to go to Athens, but God gets him there. Corinth. Then sails to Ephesus briefly, and then home. Okay, that's the second journey. And then third journey from Antioch, wants to get to Ephesus, but travels up through here, visits all these churches, eventually makes it to Ephesus. Then back up here, visits these churches, down here, visits these churches, wants to sail home, can't, back up here, visits these churches, sails down here, sees the Ephesian elders, so, no, I'm not there, sails to Tyre, goes to Jerusalem, gets arrested, and ends up in Rome, and then the Bible story ends. We don't know what church history maybe tells us some, but okay, that's the three journeys. Let me tell you one other thing real briefly, and then I want to just throw out some quick application ideas from that. Let me just give you a real quick overview of what the timing of that might have been. Okay? Well, first of all, when was Paul born? You know, I don't know. Let's say he was born in 10. Okay? Some people were born in 2010. He was born in 10. His revelation of Jesus Christ in Damascus may have been something like AD 34. Nobody knows these dates for sure. Okay, we're just trying to get a general idea. Maybe something like AD 34. And then the Spirit sends him out to the work with Barnabas in maybe 47-ish. Now, notice that big... That's this big gap of time that I was telling you about earlier. There's a lot that goes on in that time that we're not really told. We just have these little hints about. There's a lot of years that go by there. Okay? Now, from 47 to about 57 is the Paul years that we know about. There's about 10 years there. That's what the book of Acts really records for us heavily. So, first missionary journey is something like 47 and 48. And by the way, if it seems like this is kind of too packed together, that's one of the things scholars wrestle with a little bit, because it is packed. It's a little hard to fit it all in. Second missionary journey, probably somewhere around sometime maybe later in AD 48. He's in Corinth on the second journey from about AD 50 to 52. And then, that's the second journey is about AD 48. And then the third journey is probably starts around AD 52. And on that trip, he's got 3 years in Ephesus. He's got 3 months in Greece. So this is a longer trip that's got to get us up to 55, 56, something like that. AD. So one of the things people point out, remember that we had up here a year and a half in Corinth, and that we had something like 3 years in Ephesus. So one of the things people point out is that instead of thinking of it in terms of three journeys, it's kind of more like five or six if you factor in those big long stops. It's kind of weird to talk about a trip that has a 3-year stop at a place. It's more like you had a trip before that and you have a trip after that. So that's one of the reasons why we want to make sure when we think of a missionary journey, we don't think of just constant movement, because he did have a couple big stops there. So it's about 10 years that are really packed together. Okay, there are so many other observations that could be made than the ones that I'm going to point out here, but these are just a few of my own thoughts. As I look at all of that, just a few thoughts that we could talk about for a long time, and I'm just going to go through the list. Number one, did Paul have a significant time of preparation? We're not really told what was going on in those years, but doesn't it fit a pattern of someone like Moses or even someone like Joseph for there to be a lengthy period of time in which our American human nature would say, hey, the clock's ticking, you're wasting time. And God says, slow down. there's a prepared place and a prepared time for a prepared man. And so we've got this 13, 14 years in there before the first missionary journey begins. And it just seems like part of that was God getting Paul ready for what was coming. So number one, maybe a significant time of preparation. Number two, 10 compact years of ministry. Now, overall, he may have had about 30 years of ministry from his salvation until his death. But about 10 years that were really go, 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 minus that little window in Ephesus and Corinth. 10 years when all those trips that we just described were packed into. And so it just reminds me of the words of Jim Elliot, "I seek not a long life, but a full one like yours, Lord Jesus." You know, I think probably, and I got to be careful when I say this, don't take this the wrong way, but I think probably Paul was doing a bunch of things in those years that we would look at and say, that's not good stewardship. You're not going to last for the long term if you keep living like that. You're putting yourself in too much danger. You're getting too little sleep. You're working too hard. This is not wise. Now, again, don't mistake anything I'm saying there. Don't be foolish. Be a good steward. But there is also a reality that Jim Elliot grabbed a hold of that is true, and that is that God may not have 90 years for you. God may have a season of life that's really packed and really intense and really wears you out. And who knows, he might take you home at the end of it. That's sober, huh? These blank stares. Wow, that is sober to think about. Okay, so I think about this because I'm in the hospital enough and around young cancer patients and stuff enough for it regularly to be crossing my mind that it could be me with that diagnosis tomorrow. Would I have the spiritual maturity to say, okay, Lord, thank you for 40 years and thank you for the chances to know you and love you and serve you and, you know, thank you. Or would I be in a rage of, I'm only 40, this is too young, this isn't fair? That is hard questions, isn't it? And I'm not claiming I know what the answer would be for me because I'm not in that position. I'm just saying when I look at that, I think of really, however long Paul's overall life was, it was about 10 really main packed years that God had for him. Number three, we should note his partnership with that sending church in Antioch and how he kept going back there to report to them, probably to get refreshed and rested there. And I think we should add also his accountability with the Antioch church and the apostles in Jerusalem. Scholars don't, it's hard to figure out exactly how many times he made trips back to Jerusalem, but probably four at least before, maybe four before his trip when he got arrested. So his He had that accountability with the church in Antioch and this connection he kept building with the Jerusalem church and the apostles in Jerusalem. So the point is, he was not just like some freewheeling, do my own thing, I don't care what anybody thinks kind of a guy. That is not at all how Paul operated. He was a man who traveled freely under accountability. And that's a really important combination of things. Number five, as we look at those maps and things, we see the gospel for all people and cultures. We see Paul always going to the Jew first, but then from there going to anybody and going to all sorts of different kinds of cities and towns, different kinds of cultures and places, because Jesus was Lord of all. And, you know, as you know, what he wanted to do was get to Rome, and then he wanted to get past Rome all the way to the known western limits of the Roman Empire, to Spain. So we see the gospel for all peoples and cultures. We see number six, a priority on strategic cities. That doesn't mean that all of the places Paul went to were large. I mean, the largest cities in the world back then were only a few hundred thousand people. It wasn't even remotely close to what we think of today. But, you know, practically one of the things God used to help get me to Southern California was taking a Bible dictionary And just looking up in the Bible dictionary, the places that Paul went to, and just reading about those places. And it was just the simplest little thing that God used in my heart, because I read about, as I went through the list of all the places Paul visited, or where he did ministry, and I looked him up in a Bible dictionary, it just felt like every entry said the same thing. It said something like, this was a very important center of commerce in its region. This was right on a main travel route where everybody came through. This was the capital of its province or area. Like, every city was like that. And so it just seemed very evident that he was putting a priority on places that were places of influence. And that was just a concept God used, that one of the ways we ended up in California and in the ways God led. And so there's actually 6, 7, 8, 9, all going to go together here. Unfortunately, they're going to be on two slides. 6 is a priority on strategic cities. 7 is preaching where Christ is not known. You know that passage in Romans 15, 19, and 20? Preaching where Christ is not known. And number 8, a desire for geographical thoroughness. Again, Romans 15, 19, and 20, Paul talks about how he has fully preached the gospel all the way across to that far side of Greece. So even though he couldn't go all those places himself, he could get to strategic cities all the way through there. He was trying to take the gospel where Christ wasn't known and trying to be geographically thorough within his limitations as a human being. And so then we need to add to that, number 9, an understanding of the way the church grows and the gospel spreads. So you read about those cities and you see how they seem to have been places that were connected, places of commerce, places of influence. And then you go read the epistles and he talks to those churches about how their faith spread to their region. So you can see how he was thinking. He's thinking, I need to take Christ where he hasn't been known, but I can't take Christ everywhere. I want the gospel to go with geographical thoroughness, but I can't get it everywhere. So what I can do is hit strategic cities, and I can plant churches there, and I can build up believers there. See, look at the next point. A deep commitment to strengthening disciples. Did Paul see a conflict between discipleship and evangelism? What he saw was that if he didn't do deep discipleship, those churches wouldn't reach their regions. And so he kept going back to the same churches when he could have been spending his time taking Christ where he wasn't known, because he knew that the ultimate big picture strategy wasn't for him to get the gospel to everybody from Jerusalem to Illyricum or Rome or Spain, but for there to be churches with geographical thoroughness that then had believers with depth and maturity that the gospel would spread from them throughout their region, like it did, for example, through Macedonia because of the church in Thessalonica. So do you see how 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 go together? Or even 5? The gospel for all peoples and cultures, a priority on strategic cities, preaching where Christ is not known, a desire for geographical thoroughness, an understanding of the way the church grows and the gospel spreads, a deep commitment to strengthening disciples. All of those fit together in how Paul thought about the church and the gospel and discipleship and evangelism and all those things. All right, a couple different things here before we finish up. Number 11, I see Paul embracing a tremendous amount of uncertainty. It's jarring. In our day when we try to insure everything, you know, we want insurance on our life, insurance on our cell phone in case we drop it, insurance on our house, insurance on our car. We want retirement savings. I'm not saying any of those things are wrong. Those are actually really good. Please make sure you have life insurance because of the number of times that there's a death in a family left without financial help. So I'm not criticizing any of that. But I'm saying when you see the kind of uncertainty Paul embraced, it's jarring in comparison with the kind of security we try to guarantee. So buy insurance, take advantage of the things that we have today, yet let God do whatever he wants to do then in the big picture of your life. Your life doesn't have to be calm, comfortable, stable to be a life that honors the Lord. That may not be what God has for you, the way your life's going to look for the Lord's glory. So Paul embraced much uncertainty. And number 12, Paul did not do it alone. I pointed out before Paul's being under accountability. This is similar to that. Paul was not only under accountability, but he was almost never alone. And when he was alone, he did not like it. He wanted team, he wanted help, but I think he also wanted the accountability of that. He knew that he didn't have all the gifts, he couldn't do everything. So he did not do it alone. Romans 16 is an amazing chapter to see that. Such a team player. Number 13, I think about life's seasons and limitations. Part of the reason why I emphasize that 10 years of really active ministry is because for 10 years, Paul went, traveled, preached, planted, strengthened, and then all of a sudden, arrest. I remember being in the hospital a few years ago, and I walked into a room, and there was probably a 40-something lady pacing her hospital room. And she said to me, "I'm a personal fitness trainer. I go all day long, and I'm stuck in a hospital room, and it's going to drive me crazy." Paul went for 10 years, and all of a sudden, jail. Now who am I as a Christian? If your identity was church planter, go guy, reach people for the Lord guy, new people, where Christ is never gone guy, you know, Paul could have plunged into, you know, what we call today depression or something, you know. And so it just really helps us think about life's seasons and life's limitations. Life changes. You hit different seasons of life when stuff can really turn upside down. And the ways you were serving the Lord before and the ways, opportunities you had before, the things your body could do before, you can't do anymore. And sometimes we get stuck, you know, when those changes happen. So it's interesting to see all the way through to the end of Acts 28, all the way through to Rome, Paul living within his limitations, you know. What do you call it when you're at home but not allowed to leave? What do you call that?
House arrest?
After years, you know, in jail and travels as a prisoner and trials and now in house arrest in Rome, just what he, within his capacity, doing what he can do for the Lord. I think that's really exemplary for us. And then number 14, as I look at all that, I just ask, what got him out of bed every morning? That amount of travel, and not today's kind of travel, not Instagram kind of travel, that amount of opposition, that amount of just the weight of all those churches, that amount of fatigue and sometimes not having food and the shipwrecks and the beatings and the sicknesses and all the things that he describes to the Corinthians. What kept him going? I mean, practically speaking, he has to have had a lot of mornings when it was hard just to get the body up, in addition to the heart, the spirit, you know. And so it's really rich, I think, that we have so many things he told us about that. And we could answer number 14 for weeks. That could be a year-long sermon series, what got Paul out of bed every morning. But if we just hit a couple big highlights, the first one, I think, has to be Jesus was really alive. The absolute certainty of the resurrection was a compulsion that he could not get away from. Jesus was really alive. And number two is Jesus as Lord of all, Jesus as his king. He just talks about that so much. You know, he tells the Romans, Jesus died that he might be Lord, both of the dead and living. Whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. And so Paul was a man who was owned. He was a man who belonged to somebody else. So I think the absolute certainty of the resurrection and being owned by Jesus as Lord. And then number three, you know, he says, and again, this is only three out of like 50, but number three, he says, the love of Christ compels us. It is this compulsion, because we come to this conclusion. We reach this judgment that if one died for all, then everybody's dead. You know, and he died for all, that we might no longer live for ourselves, but for him who died and rose again on our behalf. So there's this Christ's love for him that is this very deep compulsion that I think got him out of bed every morning for 10 very, very, very rigorous years, followed by prison for several years. So praise the Lord for those examples.